important. That's a very healthy and important thing to do. But I shared this with a couple of people, and I felt that it's really important to hear. There was an article that was written by Clint Gresham. Anyone holding a Clint Gresham? Saw that? Yeah, you know who he is. Or you saw the article.
Saw
the article. It'd be impressive if you knew who Clint Gresham was outside of the article. Did you share this article?
You don't have time to
share it with me. Okay. So let's just listen to this. About a week ago, a little over a week ago, in preparation for Super Bowl 53, he wrote the following. On Sunday evening, players of either the Los Angeles Rams and Patriots will experience the euphoria of being deemed the best team in the NFL and winners of Super Bowl 53. Okay, he wrote this right before the Super Bowl. I have walked in their shoes, high fives, the teammate embraces, the confetti flying, the tears flowing. I played 6 seasons as a long snapper with the Seattle Seahawks. I was the team in 2013 when we crushed the Denver Broncos to win the coveted title of Super Bowl. I got to do some math here. What year was it? 48. Super Bowl 48. That day was a whirlwind for me. I remember storming the field, jumping into confetti, and being right behind Coach Pete Carroll as Zach Miller and Russell Wilson doused him with Gatorade. It was one of the most epic days of my life. After that moment, my teammates and I were greeted with screams and cheers by hundreds of thousands of fans as we paraded down the streets of downtown Seattle. We felt like kings. I remember standing on top of the truck I was on with punter John Ryan and the kicker holding the Lombardi Trophy and starting a massive Seahawks, Seahawks chant. All of it led to the concluding ceremony at CenturyLink Field, where each player was introduced and all kinds of insanity ensued. It is a day I'll never forget. Okay, but now listen to this next line. I saw this line and I said, I have to share this. Listen to this. But 2 months later, the celebrations ended and the cameras quit rolling. I can't tell you how many times I heard my teammates say, I keep waiting for it to sink in that we won the Super Bowl. I said it too. It went on for months until I realized what all of us were really saying was, I keep waiting for this thing to make me happy the way I thought it would, and it hasn't. And now I'm actually kind of scared about that because I've made this my life pursuit and I got it, and I'm still wanting more. And he concludes, was it awesome winning a Super Bowl? Absolutely. Did it make me happy and satisfy my core need for significance, joy, love, or value? Not even close. You may not be able to relate to winning the Super Bowl, but we all have a Super Bowl for which we are waiting. Unfortunately, in focusing on this, we incorrectly place our identity in all of the wrong things. So the first reaction is, right, because you're just a long snapper for the Seattle Seahawks for 6 years, but if you're Tom Brady, who won the Super Bowl, and you're the greatest of all time, so that's a different thing. But he's writing, he's saying, I've been there. And he says, it was one of the most epic days of my life. It was a unique experience. It was so fun. But for him to say, this line is just so strong, we kept waiting for it to sink in. When's it going to sink in? Until he realized, you know what, there's nothing sinking in. There's nothing to sink in. Because it's not going to solve what I'm doing. It's so powerful to me because so many people, like he says, are facing something. We all have this dimion that there's this thing, whatever it may be. Each person in their own way has this thing that they think, if I just had that, so then I would be satisfied. And it's just so not true. To hear someone who says, I've been there, I'm telling you, I was there. It was geschmack, it was fun. It was exciting. It was, you know, it was amazing to have the cameras rolling and to be parading down the street and people cheering for my success. He said, but at some point that stopped. And I asked myself, does this satisfy my core needs for significance, joy, love, and value? Not even close. And Clint Gresham went on to become, he's a religious person. I think he's a pastor now. Does a lot of communal work, right? And he's feeding the, so to speak, his soul with things that are truly deep and truly meaningful. And I read this and I just said, how often do we not stop to make this cheshbon hanefesh, where we think that if we would just have this mysterious thing that we want, it would solve the problem. There's an amazing Maamar Chazal. Chazal say, a person doesn't leave this world, ein adam meis, v'chatzi ta'avaso biyadam. Read this Maamar Chazal. A person doesn't leave this world with half of his desires fulfilled. And the Medrash goes on to say, it's a Medrash in Koheles. The Medrash says, person has mana, he has a mana, he has 100, he wants Masayim, he wants 200. He doesn't leave this world with half his desires fulfilled. If he has $1 million, he wants $2 million. What's the problem with that, Maamar Chazal? Listen again. A person doesn't leave this world with half of his desires in his hand. If he has 100, he wants 200. No?
A person doesn't leave this world with anything.
Okay, also true. Okay. Basic, simple. Actually, a mathematical question. A person doesn't leave this world with half of his desires in his hand. If he has 100, he wants 200. 100 is half of 200. Sounds like a silly question, but the Maharam Shif in the 1600s asked that question. He said, I don't understand Chazal. In the back of the Gemara in Chulin, there are these tiny little insights from the Maharam Shif. Drushim unechmadim from the Maharam Shif. So he said, I don't understand. 100 is half of 200. So he says a deep psychological insight. You know what he says? He says the 100 that you don't have, the $1 million you don't yet have, in your mind is somehow what? Is somehow worth so much more than $1 million that you do have. He says it's human nature for a person to think, if I would just have, right? And he says, I'm there, I did it. My whole life was dedicated to this. Right? And he says, now I realize that the thing that I've been waiting my whole life has been dedicated to. So now I'm there. I won the Super Bowl. It happened. And it was great. But it's not it. And so many times we live with that feeling like if I could just, right, the anticipation, the hope, the imagination of what it could be, right, leads us down this path, which is just not it, until tragically we get there. And then we're shocked to find out, wait a minute, so now I actually have $1 million. But now I want $2 million. I'm still not happy. I'm not satisfying my core needs. I'll be Malami's first. I'll assume that most of you probably saw the game. No? Super Bowl? No one watched the game? Everyone busy learning with the show? I saw when it was over. But did anyone else get the sense that, like, Tom Brady was a little bored? Shtickle bored, like, game? He was basically saying, like, this is nice, and I know, okay, great, now I've got a record. He basically said, like, go away with your cameras. I want to find my wife and children and spend time with the people who actually matter most. Right? There was this sense of, like, I need my ikkar. This is tough. That was an amazing thing to see. To see a person to work so hard at something, to get there, and to know all the hype and the anticipation, but to then say, like, I want to give my kids a hug. Because that's going to satisfy me much more than some silly trophy. That's an amazing thing for a person to be able to admit that. And I think that's what the Torah is telling us. If I go back to last week's parasha for a minute, I think that's what the Torah is telling us in the mission statement of the Torah. What's the mission statement of the Torah? You ever think about that? What's the Torah? What's God's mission statement?
It's not a business.
What's Hashem's mission statement? Every good organization, anyone who has a goal, has to have a mission statement. The Torah has a lot of mission statements. The Torah has a lot of goals. And if you have to say, what is Hashem's greatest desire in the Torah, as expressed by the Torah? What is that desire? So there's a medrash in Parshas Naso. The pasuk is in this passage. Parsha. Asu li mikdash. Nu, v'shachanti b'socha. Right? Make for me a mikdash. V'shachanti b'socha. So there's a medrash in Parshas Naso, medrash Tanchuma, that says that Hashem's greatest desire, nis'ave hakadosh baruch hu, Hashem's greatest taiva, Hashem's desire, is to what? Is that he should have a dira b'tachtonim, he should have a place in this world, just like he has in the Elyonim. What does that mean? If you ask people throughout history, where is God found? The Gemara has such a discussion in Brachos, right? Point to God. Right? So a lot of people would point up and out. I think historically, most people would imagine a God that's somewhere beyond. A God that's somehow transcendent. But HaKadosh Baruch Hu says very clearly, and Avram began this mission, and everyone continued that mission, to try to bring Hashem in. V'asu li mikdash v'shachanti b'socham, says the Medrash, Hashem says, I want to have a dira b'tachtonim, just like I know I have a dira b'elyonim. Up there, I know I'm acknowledged. I want to be acknowledged down here. That's the Pashup Shah. That's what the Medrash says. I want a dira b'tachtonim. And how do we achieve that? We build a mishkan, we build a base of mikdash. But on a deeper level, many Sefer Chassidus talk about it. Already the Al-Sheikh 500 years ago, the Al-Sheikh HaKadosh 500 years ago, Moshe Al-Sheikh says it. That's not what the Pasuk really means. Because that still doesn't really solve the problem. Hashem is out there, so now we make him a specific place down here. Hashem says, on a deep level, Mikdash, V'shachanti B'sofam, I want to dwell where? Not just amongst them. I don't just want a place in the center of a camp, a mishkan, so to speak, the center point where I'm found. V'shachanti b'socham, the Al-Sheikh already says, and again, many Sefer Chassidus develop, V'shachanti b'socham really means b'socham, I want to dwell within them. I want you to try to what? to fill your inner world with me. Because if you try to fill that inner need, something deep and something real, with chitzonius, there's always going to be this feeling that's not it. You'll get there, and then you'll be so depressed. I thought this was it. I spent my whole life chasing this, and it turned out to not be it. So Hashem says, v'shachati b'zohar, what is your inner world filled with? What fills you on the inside? But Moshe Shmuel Shapiro was a Rosh Yeshiva in Eretz Yisrael. Passed away about 12 years ago, 15 years ago. Bar Yaakov. So I read once a story about him. He had some type of kidney failure later in life, and he had to go for dialysis treatments. So he's sitting in the hospital one time, and there was another Chashuv distinguished, didn't say in the Sefer who it was, another Chashuv Talmud Chacham sitting next to him, also receiving treatment. And this other Talmud Chacham is sitting in his chair, I guess it was hours of treatment, and he's sitting there, and he's wearing, he has earbuds in, or he has headphones on, and he's listening to Shiur. And Rav Moshe Shmuel Shapiro is just sitting there. Sitting in his chair, just sitting there. Passing the time, spacing out. A little bit he's talking to this other Rav, we're talking a little bit, you know, saying hello to each other, talking, learning a little bit, sharing some ideas, but for the most part he's just sitting there. And this other Rav is like pounding Shiur, you know, just sitting there for hours, listening to Shiur after Shiur after Shiur. So finally, one of the nurses comes over. She sees these two rabbis sitting next to each other. One is, you know, seems to be using his time well. The other one is kind of just sitting there, kind of, you know, probably would like to be learning. Maybe he just doesn't have a listening device. So she says to him, "Quote her up. Would you like me to get you something to listen to?" Right. So this other rav, you know, has whatever. So she says, "Can I get you? Would you like me to get you something to listen to?" Her headphones are on. So Moshe Shmuel Shapiro says back to her. Listen to this line. Look at this line. He says back there, he says, "Kasher shomim mibifnim, ein sorech lishmo mibachutz." When you hear it on the inside, you don't need to pump it in from the outside. "Kasher shomim mibifnim, ein sorech lishmo mibachutz." Right? You think I'm sitting here spacing out? You think I have nothing to do? He says, I've made myself into a dwelling place for the divine, where I can be with Hashem, and I can be thinking Torah, I can be learning Torah, I don't need a sefer. I don't need headphones. I'm in a state of being with Hashem. Now again, I don't know if he was working on a sugya in his mind, if he was just being davuk to Hashem in some meditative way. I have no idea what he was doing. But he felt, why do I always need something external? And again, that's a wholly external thing. Hashem says, "V'shachanti b'socha." I want you to let it in. Because right? If you can let it in, you can satisfy that core need and that core desire of what's really going on the inside. And again, a lot of people unfortunately live their life pursuing all sorts of falsehood, all sorts of superficial things. And the hope is that when I get there, it'll finally satisfy it. And here's an honest man, Clint Gresham, writing about, "I've been there, I've walked in their shoes, I know what it feels like. It's great, it's fun, but it's not it. I'm telling you, it's not it." It's hard for us to believe that. Someone else tells you it's not it. It's very hard to accept it from someone else. There's a pasuk at the end of Parshas Bahar. Actually, beginning of Parshas Bahar. Pasuk says, "Velo sonu ishas amiso." A person should not deceive amiso, one of his fellow Jews. So the Rebbe of Simcha Buna of Peshischa said, "Lo sonu ishas amiso." There's a prohibition in the Torah to deceive someone else. So the Rebbe of Simcha Buna said, that's me'ikar hadin. Right? What does the pasuk say? What is the Torah asking of us? Don't deceive other people. Don't trick people. Be an honest, be Yisrael, Yashar. Be an honest person. So Simcha Bunu said, that's the Ikar Hadin. That's the Shura Sadin. He says, what is the Pasuk telling us, Lifnim Shura Sadin? He said, a chassid goes beyond the letter of the law. The letter of the law is don't trick someone else. What is a person who is striving for something more see in that Pasuk? What's Lifnim Shura Sadin? Don't trick yourself. That's much harder. Except that I shouldn't be deceptive and mislead other people. Okay. I'm a decent person, I'm an honest person. But to be able to get to a point where I'm so honest with myself, to ask myself, what makes me happy, truly happy? What fills my inner world? What's my b'shachanti b'socham? What do I have going on in the inside? Or how much am I still pursuing superficial things that are not really going to satisfy that core need for value and meaning and purpose in my life? And how does it reflect in my decision-making? How does it reflect l'maisa? That's the litmus test. You ask yourself, right? What do I believe is going to give me meaning and purpose and happiness, true happiness in my life? Yishenichlas al der marbin b'simcha. This Svarim explain, what is the Simcha of Adar? Exactly what we just mentioned a moment ago. The Svarim say the name of the month, Adar, could be understood Aleph Dar. What is Aleph Dar? Who's Aleph? Aleph. But what about... The word aluf means what? A chief, a master, a leader. Hashem is alufo shal olam. The Medrash calls him alufo shal olam, the master of the world. The aleph dar. The goal is to take the aleph, the one above, and dar, to give him a dira, to give him a place to live by you. To give a Kadosh Baruch Hu a real place by you. And not to be fooled by so many things which are so deceptive. It's part of the secret behind why we're costumes on Purim. There's a lot going on there. But the avoda of Purim, the simcha of Purim, is if I can let the aleph dar, if I can let HaKadosh Baruch Hu in. What's my insight? Is my Torah, is my tefillah, is that my chitzonius? But am I... It's about getting the job, it's about getting the this, it's about getting that pleasure, of it, you know? What am I chasing at my core? What am I hearing on the inside? Not what's being pumped into this. Right? But what have I actually internalized and acquired internally? Have I been able to go with Nimbishur, so not only not to trick other people, but not to trick myself? Just end with an amazing story, tiny little story, then we'll dive in Mincha. The Sefer Olamelech, which is a collection of Melech of the Gents. So there's a conversation that's recorded here, it's in Reish Ayin Beis, a conversation between Rav Elimelech of the Gents and his brother Rabbi Zusha. Adam HaRishon, when Adam HaRishon sinned, Chazal already, but certainly the Svarim HaKadoshim interpret Adam as being the all-encompassing person, which means we were all there on some level. Spiritually, we were all there. We all chose to eat from the Eitz Hadas. So Rav Elimelech and Rav Zusha were once speaking, and the Rebbe Rav Zusha asked Rav Elimelech, he said, my dear holy brother, I don't understand. If we believe, like the Svarim tell us, that we were there at the time that the Nachash was luring Adam HaRishon and Chava into eating from the tree, so they knew who they were. We're smart people. We're righteous people. We're connected to God. Why didn't we stop them? If our neshamas were there, why didn't we stop Adam from eating from the tree? Why did we allow the snake to deceive us? Right? We were there. We were there at the time. Why didn't we stop? So Rav Elimelech Lejeune said back, he said, I'll tell you, what did the Nachash claim? What did the Nachash claim? The Nachash claimed, eat from this tree. Hashem doesn't want me to eat from the tree. Shh, don't worry about Hashem. Eat from this tree, and you'll have all your desires. You don't need Hashem. You'll be good. This will satisfy everything. You'll be the one telling others what to do. God doesn't want you to eat from the tree because God is scared that if you eat from the tree, you'll also become God. Right? That was the deception. That was the lie. That was the trick of the Nachash. So Rav Elimelech Lejeune said, we knew it was a trick. And we allowed other nations to eat. You know why? Because it was important for humanity to learn that when you listen to the Nachash and he makes you all sorts of promises and you think this is going to be it, Rav Elimelech said, better to eat from the tree and just find out it's not it. Let the world find out what's alive. Eat from the tree for all the damage it's going to cause, but eat from the tree, be there, experience it, and just know that when the Nachash tells you, if you just do this thing, I know it's not so proper, it's not what Hashem wants, but do this thing, and then you'll have what you desire. Rav Elimelech said, let the world learn that it's a big lie. Let the world find out the truth. We ate from the tree, and all it did was make things a lot worse. It didn't make things better. It didn't satisfy that core need, that core desire. Whatever Adam thought it was going to give him, it gave him just the opposite. So Rav Elimelech said, it's important for us to learn that. Better we should learn it the hard way, and hopefully learn that, than to go our whole life with dimyonos, imagining that if we could just, then. Right? So again, I was just so nispal. I read this line from Clint Kashi. For him to be able to say, when's it going to sink in? When's it going to sink in? There's things that we think like, oh, this is going to satisfy. And it's just not it. Hashem should help us to fill our inner world. Again, in the month of Adar, it's the time of Aleph Dar, to bring Hashem inside. And when we come to Shir, when we daven, it should be an internal experience. Not something that I'm just going through emotions. But it should be something that mamish develops my core and satisfies my innermost desire. And then, mishenichnas Adar, mishenichnas, when you let the Aleph Dar, nichnas, when you let it enter you, then Amir Hashem will live lives that are filled with true amnesty. Thank you very much. Food for thought. Who is meaningful?
It's very true. It's very true.